Greetings and welcome on board WDKOK Sunrise. I'm Mark Lawrence. Our guest today, Harry Mathias, the superintendent of the Central Columbia School District, worked at the district for 35 years.
That's right, 35 years. Started as a math teacher in 1984 out of Bucknell. Math teacher for 10 years, curriculum coordinator for 6, and superintendent now for 19, which we believe is the longest in the school in the state.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, good for you. Well, yeah, a lot of superintendents jump around because they really try to find the ideal fit for whatever their gift or life stage is for them. But for you, just super serving Central Columbia has been your vision for 3 decades.
Absolutely. Central Columbia has been home for me and for my wife and my family for a long time. It's been exactly the right fit in terms of the right culture and values, and we just love it there.
All right. Well, you've been able to see some very significant changes, particularly in recent years. I think we're going to have to give our audience a one-minute tour of the high school, and that's going to launch into why it's critical that that school is built the way it is.
So Central Columbia High School is built on a career pathway model. That model has 3 main tenets to it. The first tenet is it is college preparatory for all students, which means that your requirements, your academic core requirements on all subjects, are the default curriculum for all students. Now, students can accelerate in areas that they have strength, but again, there's a minimum college preparation for all students. The second tenet is a career preparation for all students. Central Columbia's curriculum is based on 5 broad career pathways: arts and communications, mathematics and engineering, science, agri-science, and health, and so on. There are 5 main career pathways.
Business, finance, marketing, and information technology.
Correct.
And human services.
Correct. And there are courses throughout that curriculum, and in fact, over 140 courses in the high school. But each of those courses falls in one of those main career pathways. In order to graduate, a student must take at least 4 credits in one career pathway, a primary pathway, and at least 2 credits in a secondary career pathway. That is designed so that students get a feel for some type of career before they leave high school and before they go on to whatever's next for them. The third component of the career pathway model is a series of courses, 3 courses we call Futures 1, 2, and 3 in 9th, 10th, and 11th grade that focuses on a number of things. It focuses on technology skills and ethics, personal finance, but it also focuses on career development process. So a student throughout that process will look at their interests but also their aptitudes and match those two together to form a career plan, and they will actually write a career plan. It will guide their high school course selection. It'll guide what comes next, be it college or career or whatever. But that career plan is then presented in their senior year to a group of business leaders who comes in and forms a panel. We actually have over 100 local business leaders who will come in, and they will view the seniors' career plans. And they have to pass that. It's about a half-hour process where a student will present their career plan. They will get feedback, and they will get interviewed by this panel of business leaders. And in the end, they have to give them a thumbs up or the student does not graduate.
It's like a vo-tech school for the real world.
Well, it's vocational in the sense that we very much believe that every student at some point is going to enter the local economy. They're going to become a consumer. They're going to become someone who's a producer in the economy. So we try throughout their high school to give them a sense of what those careers could be like. Many of our courses have been developed around high rigor and high relevance, and we define that as having real-world applications. We have certainly developed a number of courses that do that, and again, by making that a requirement for all students, in addition to the college preparatory piece, we believe that our students are incredibly well-prepared for what comes next.
Now, I know it's a mantra, and it's a catchphrase, and it's a program, don't leave kids behind, or no child left behind. That's sort of the old school way to say it, but this system will not allow a student to be left behind.
No, and in lots of ways. First of all, they're not left behind academically. One of the biggest concerns in American education is the lowering of standards, and we just refuse to do that at Central Columbia. We have set very high rigor in the academic core. It may sound like a joke, but mathematics will play a role in the 21st century. So will science. So will communication skills. So that our students are able to speak and do mathematics and do all of those logical skills. That's important to us. So we don't want to leave them behind there. But clearly, we do not want to leave them behind when it comes to preparation for what comes next. You know, 80% of our students go on to college, and it's a statistic across the nation that 88% of all students who go to college change their major at least once. At Central Columbia, it's only 38%, so it's well less than half the national average, and we believe that is largely true because of the preparation that they receive at our school. But more importantly, what it's done is it saves their parents tens of thousands of dollars in tuition money that they would have to pay every time their child changes their major. A third thing, and probably maybe the most important thing that they're not left behind, there's an incredible amount of research that says that where students tend to wash away from our system when they head towards dropout status or whatever, that is because they are not engaged. If a student is engaged at something in school, they're going to be successful. That could be a teacher. It could be a coach. It could be a sport. But in our school, it's all those things. But additional to that, with the career pathway model, we have courses that actually interest a student, that connect to their aptitudes and their interests, and we believe that strongly engages our students. The data we're seeing, our discipline rates are way down, and our success rates are way up.
Now, throughout the process of helping these students, they're not self-guided. They will have advisors and teachers and guidance counselors integrally involved throughout.
Correct. So in our school, the guidance counselors are really part of the core academic part of the school. They're not involved with discipline at all. But
they're not tucked away in the office somewhere. They are right in the middle of all of this, the classrooms.
Correct. In particular, we place the guidance office right in the center of the academic core of the building. Those counselors are out in classrooms. They're part of the futures classes. They're administering career measurement tools and all of those things, and they're collecting that information. Additional to that, every student in our school has an advisor that they meet with about every 2 weeks, and that advisor guides them through that career development process. Once the student selects their career pathway, that advisor is someone who actually teaches within that career pathway.
All right, and that advisor also gets to talk to the student just about how life is going, their demeanor, and sort of where they are in relation to, you know, their moods and so on.
Exactly. So that advisor, and we try to train them on not only those social issues and mental health issues, but also, of course, they're an expert in the career area that student is going. Very much of what we do in terms of student preparation and teacher preparation is have everyone involved understand what's going on in the world of work around us. We have invested an incredible amount of time and money in getting our teachers and students out in the local business and industry. We want teachers there so they can take what they've learned in those businesses and they know what's going on in those businesses and bring it back into the daily lessons that they teach. And we want the students there as well. Now, I've been involved with this for a long time. 20 years ago, if I was sitting in a meeting at the local Chamber of Commerce, what you would hear business and industry people saying is, we have this issue of brain drain, that our best and brightest students, they would go off to college and then they would have it in their head that in order to get a good job, they'd have to go south, they'd have to go to the city, they'd have to go somewhere to get a good job. And the problem with that was the students didn't realize the opportunities that existed right here in our backyard, that good engineering jobs, that good accounting jobs, that good healthcare jobs all existed right here. But there was this gap between what existed and what the students knew existed or what the school knew existed. So we made a concentrated effort to bridge that gap, if you will, to get our teachers and our students connected and out to those businesses. And I can tell you now, a lot of the students who I run into will say, hey, I can get a very good engineering job right down the street at Sekisui, or right down the street at Conair, or right up the street at Daico or CSS Industries, any of those things. And that's very important because many of our students love this region, just like I do. They see the quality of life. They see, many of the things they love. And if they could connect what they love with a career they like, that's a valuable connection. Clearly, it helps our local industry. Many of them are looking at a demographic challenge that they're seeing a declining enrollment, yet they need quality workers in order to maintain their quality of work. And making this connection has been invaluable.
And that takes us all the way back to where I started. You had to have a physical plant that could support this. Some bricks and mortar conversation, please. Start with a live lamb and take me out to the fact that the study halls don't exist, and walk me through your high school.
So Central Columbia High School was designed to implement the model we're talking about. What a lot of schools do is they build a box and then put the kids in it. What we did is we designed an academic program and then designed a building to implement that. So in Central Columbia High School, what happened first was the development of the career pathways model and then the series of courses that fell within those pathways. So we have courses like athletic training 1 and 2. So because of that, and other health occupations courses. Because of that, we have areas in the building, including a training room and a fitness room, that are designed to implement those lab areas. We have a television studio which is designed so that communications can be taught, technology can be taught. We have a 3D computer lab where art courses in 3D design and 2D design, digital photography can be taught. We have an agricultural program, and agriculture is the largest occupational area in Pennsylvania, so it's major to our local economy. We have an agricultural facility that has a live animal lab where currently we have a steer and we have a goat and we have rabbits and chickens that students come in and do lab work on. They draw blood, they take their temperature, they do all of those things with the animals. We also have in the ag area a food processing lab. We have a greenhouse. We have a tractor and a wagon where students can get certified to drive and park and all of those things. Additionally, we have an engineering lab. In fact, we have 3 spaces for engineering, everywhere from a CAD lab where students design projects, but also metal, plastics, and wood areas where they can take the designs that they've done digitally and they can build those things. What's particularly impressive in our lab areas for engineering is the digital quality, the fact that these are programmable machines. I mean, we had the HR director at Conair come through and tell us that our technology is more sophisticated than theirs. So that's a good sign. We have science labs that are state-of-the-art. We have a makerspace lab, which is designed for students to do innovative work and design things. There's 3D printers there. There's a robotics program and lab there. So there's many, many spaces in the building that are designed to implement the elective courses built for our program.
You don't need substitute teachers then if the teachers know what they're going to teach the next day. The students, of course, every student has their own iPad. I should mention that. You see them walking around with them all the time. Every student has one distributed by the school. And so students can work on a daily class, sometimes by themselves, even without the teacher there.
That's correct. So Central Columbia is what I call a digitally converted school. We did a lot of teacher training to teach teachers how to develop content digitally. Teachers have a MacBook Pro and an iPad. And then the students, every student in our school district now, kindergarten through 12th grade, now has their own individual iPad. And it's really where much of the instruction is done. And we got to the point several years ago that we felt so confident in the teacher's ability to drive out instruction that we use that to address the concern of a substitute teacher shortage. I mean, back when I was teaching 25 years ago, you could maybe find a teacher who could teach mathematics. Well, anymore, just finding someone in to cover the class was a challenge. And what it really was becoming was simply babysitting, and you were spending money and really getting no educational value. So what we did is we decided that when a teacher was going to be out, what they would do is develop their lesson, but they would do it digitally using the authoring tools that we had developed through Apple. They would develop their lesson. They would send that lesson to their students when they were going to be out. We actually hire one substitute who takes residence in the auditorium. And the students in the classes where the teachers are out, they come to the auditorium. They get an email in the morning saying the teacher's out. They come to the auditorium. That one teacher is expecting them. And the lesson that the teacher who's absent developed is sent to them on the iPad. So they have the lesson there. They sit down. The one substitute guides them through that. Our rule is there has to be an assignment that's submitted by the end of the day. And, of course, what happens then is we have to hire only one substitute. We do this in the middle school and the high school. For the entire school, it doesn't matter how many teachers are out. So in that effect, it certainly saves money. But more importantly, what it does is there is no longer a gap in the student's education. The lesson they're getting that day comes from their original teacher. It's just driven out digitally.
And you don't do announcements at the end of the day or in the morning. You can just email the students since you gave them the iPad, so you know they have email. So that takes care of that. And you don't interrupt education time. I guess that's the key. And then when you walk up and down the hallways, you do not see kids meandering about. I mean, you and I toured the whole school, maybe one or two students the whole time, and this is 45 minutes of hall time.
Yeah. And again, it goes back to engagement. Our students, what we're finding is they are engaged in the classes they're involved in. So one of the kind of the visuals of the culture of the school is, you know, during the time when kids are supposed to be in class, are they actually in class and are they learning? And, you know, when you look down the hallway, and we stood at various locations where you could see down multiple hallways, and in the middle of the class, you see no one. That's a sign that students are in class, teachers are teaching, and learning is happening. So that's something we're very proud of.
I took a picture of you in front of the leaderboard that relates to academics. I think it was algebra and reading and math maybe was or science, and Central's at the top regionally.
Yes, those are the Keystone exams. We certainly set the goals for ourselves. And the Keystone exams are given in Algebra 1, Literature, and Biology. And, you know, we try to score as high as we possibly can. In fact, at Central Columbia, we still have as a graduation requirement that students pass the Keystone exam. You know, we're under the belief that that is a fairly low bar, and we should not just throw that away. I mean, essentially, you're asking them to pass a final exam in Algebra 1, Biology, and Literature. A fairly low bar for students to do if you're doing good quality educational work. We've set that bar, and we annually get in the high 90% of students passing those exams. And, you know, we tell the kids this is important. So we put it right out there in the hallway. We put a graph of all the schools in the intermediate unit, and we want that Blue Jay logo to be at the very top.
Wait, you see the Blue Jay at the top. Who's your nemesis that's always close behind and maybe even in front of you, the Black Tiger?
The two that are usually close are Danville and Lewisburg. Every once in a while, someone like Southern Columbia will get in there and do a good job, too. Of course, all the schools in the region do a good job. So actually getting to the top of that list is quite a challenge, but that's something we shoot for.
It is almost like their high school career, and really, maybe not freshmen, but certainly juniors and seniors, it's very much like the first year of college.
Well, that's what we try to do. We try to make sure, and in fact, this is our measure, and I've done this for a long time, and we actually survey our students after they've graduated 1 year out and 5 years out. And we've done that for 20 years. And the reason we do that is, although, you know, you've seen all these national measures and state measures of success of schools, it's our opinion, or my opinion, that the value of a high school is really measured by how are your students doing 5 years after they've graduated. And there's different ways to measure that. But clearly doing things that prepare them for college, that prepare them for their career, that prepare them so that they don't have to take remedial credits, that prepare them so they don't change a major, that prepare them when they, if they go into the world of work, they have the soft skills that they need, that they have some technical skills that make them successful, that they have some values in terms of high expectations that they've had to meet through a high school career. Because when they walk into an employer, if someone's going to pay them money, that employer is going to expect that they work hard and they do the job for them, or they're no longer going to pay them. So the fact that we've trained the students to do all those things, you know, we think is coming back to us in the survey results we're getting, and we think it's working.
Well, you have a superlative program and a superlative school. You really deserve a lot of credit. You've helped guide this, but you have also surrounded yourself with super smart people who know what they're doing, including the incoming superintendent of the district, right?
That's correct. Jeff Groshek has been the high school principal now for about a dozen years. We put him in place there, and when we did, told him, look, I want you to do everything you can to make this the best high school it can possibly be. He did much of the research on the career pathway model, certainly guided his teachers through the curriculum development process, which was critical to putting this all in place. He was clearly my partner in getting this building designed. Now that I'm retiring, our board went through a process and they've selected him. So to be my replacement. He'll start July 1, so keeping this legacy going, I think, is in good hands.
Well, thanks for all you've done. I think just as a resident of the region, there are certainly individuals in a career around here that might coast their last year. You just kept on pushing, and your calendar is blocked out, making sure the school stays on top up until July.
Absolutely. Anybody wants to come talk to us and see us, we will be glad to show you what we're doing. And this is one of these things that we've had more and more schools come visit. And if anybody wants to come and take a look, we'll be glad to host you.
Thank you so much, Harry Mathias.
Thank you.